Welcome to The Ether. Today is Saturday, February 5th, 2022. This episode of The Ether is brought to you by Orbital Command, a community validator on Terra dedicated to educating, expanding, and promoting the lunatic community. Take advantage of their Terra Luna Intel report on Telegram, which brings you the hottest news and updates on all things Terra each and every day. Find it using the link in the show notes. You can also support their community efforts by considering them next time you're delegating or redelegating your Luna. Find out more at orbitalcommand.io. This episode of The Ether is also brought to you by WeFund. WeFund is a community crowdfunding cross-chain incubator on Terra, and it's the first launchpad that implements a milestone funding release system to protect investors. All money raised for projects is deposited in Anchor Protocol, and it's refundable, and all decisions are based on community voting power. WeFund is community-focused and designed to be a user-friendly experience for both project creators and investors. Be sure to follow them on Twitter and join the Telegram for more information. Links are in the show notes and check them out online at WeFund.app. TerraSpaces appreciates the support from all our sponsors. Today on The Ether, we have part one of a two-part space crypto tax talk with Hutch and Poppy. Let's take a listen.
Hey guys, see some people piling in. I got some people that are going to co-host with me because I am a terrible host. Good at one thing, well, two things maybe. Thinking sometimes, sometimes not, and running my mouth. But running a space, I suck at. There's Danby. Okay, cool. Invite to co-host. I think that worked, Danby. Danby, on the other hand, is an awesome co-host. Oh, cool. It says Danby is a co-host of the space. Can you hear me, Danby? Oh, cool. All right, cool. Yeah, I'm on this old broken Apple phone because I get rugged all the time with Android. So it's like the screen is all jacked up. So I have to like squint to see what's up. So it's just better if I just don't even deal with that. Hey, and Danby, when you see Crypto Knight, when you see Pappy, he's like a green guy with red eyes now. Throw him on there because I actually want to. No, it says you declined to co-host. Why'd you do that? Ugh, I'm offended. Oh, shit. Anybody else good at co-hosting? Looks like Trevor requested something. What's up, Trevor?
Yeah, you lost your co-host.
Yeah, I know. I'm totally offended.
I thought I'd come up here and keep you company while we wait for Poppy.
Thanks. Are you a good co-host? Because I'm not good at that, like, as far as managing all the requests and all that.
Yeah, I can help with that for now.
Cool.
And if Poppy wants to take it over, he can do that too.
He's going to be co-host too, but like, you know, people get rugged on these things all the time. So it's good to have a handful.
I mean, it's really bad to the point of like one time, I think the funniest rug story was there was a secret space and I was like texting with Tor and he was hosting the space, but he couldn't like do anything. Okay. And like I had to relay answers through text.
Oh, wow. Wow.
That was super funny.
So he was like listening Poppy. And then texting you and you were, oh my gosh, here's Poppy.
And they're like, who is that guy? Like, because I'm not in secret. They're like, who is this random dude?
Yeah. Well, hey, now you're part of the crew. Hopefully they threw you some governance tokens.
Nah, he doesn't have to do that. He just has to let me win at like air hockey or something and I'll be happy.
Okay. Cool, Pappy. I see you're here, buddy. I invited a couple extra co-hosts because spaces are notorious for rugging multiple people. So I hope you're cool with that.
Yeah, all good. Hey guys. Yeah, we're down to the wire here. We just launched Tractera in the last 20 minutes.
Nice.
I didn't even time
this on purpose with that.
No, but we were targeting to launch actually on Thursday, like a day before Friday. And then, you know, things didn't go to plan. Friday, you know, we continue kind of working through issues, tweaking things, polishing things up, and just didn't get to where we wanted to be. But we are deployed as of right now. For the community, everyone listening, we have quite a few people here. This release right now is beta. We're actually encouraging people who just want to use the tool to use it. We're going to look at some of the unclassified data and build better classifiers for the data that we get. I know there's like some big gaps right now, like around swap transactions. They are like closed correctly and all that. Like there's no problem there, but like we want to add classifications to kind of like improve like the searchability of stuff. So like swap transactions would be classified, you know, as the pairs in the swap, and, you know, it would just make it more descriptive and easier to search. So that's kind of the stuff we're working on now. There is going to be, I know there's a couple of gaps in some of the auto staking zap in, zap out parsers that we need to build. But we're going to have most of that stuff straightened out within the next week or so.
Well, good job. And for everybody that doesn't know, so Pappy Crypto Knight here is responsible for championing the effort to get us Traktera, because it's our responsibility as taxpayers to report and give accurate reporting. And there was actually a governance proposal, and one really big staking entity voted a big fat no, and it actually caused a big stir. I think they got skewered as a result, just because it was like they don't want to spend any money because then they get a little bit more money or whatever. And Pappy's effort to basically hire a full-time, was it a full-time dev?
Yeah, so we have a full-time dev on this right now.
And to do this for all of us and to basically ask for, it wasn't even that much money. It was like $40,000 or $50,000 of community funds that would help so many people. And like, I'm a big believer that UST follows value. And it's like, that's such a small price to pay for how much value, because without that, we'd all have to just sift through code, or as we're doing all kinds of transactions, like manually type stuff into Excel. And so Traktera, who Pappy is representing, just launched today, I guess. And it's got some holes, but the fact that, like, I didn't think it was going to be coming out until even later in the year. And he told me, I think at the end of last year, early in January, he said, yeah, it's going to be out by the end of January. And here we are. It's very early February and the thing is out, which is amazing. So congrats.
Yeah, thanks, Hutch. You know, I want to like kind of take that a little bit further, because like I don't think a lot of people like appreciate what we're doing here. And like I want to really kind of like give people a little more perspective. So, I mean, if we didn't take on the open source initiative to just do this, and specifically where Traktera came from is I had the need myself, and I was like, well, I ain't using Excel to track, you know, 30,000 transactions. I'm going to have to write something to do this. And that's how I feel like with any blockchain I interact with, that is the commitment I make when I interact with blockchain, because even most of like the tax softwares that offer parsers, usually they're not good enough to deal with my nonsense. But you know, specifically for Terra, I had nothing, and there was no software out there that did what I needed. There were other competitors, stake.tax. But I really want to point out like the cause here, because I mean, if somebody didn't take this and work on this open source, the community is basically waiting for Coinly or another big
vendor
to do this themselves and release it to the community. And that comes with its own issues, because when a vendor does it, it's all closed source. There's no open source contributions. It doesn't help the space grow. It will drive.
And they're not as committed to it as you are. It's kind of like, well, this is broken. We'll get to it when we get to it. We're dealing with 17 other chains or whatever. And you're committed.
Well, there's that. And there's also the sense that it doesn't really provide, it gives Terra users one option to use that vendor. And then you have to wait for another vendor if you want to have more than one option. And so like Traktera being a community initiative and getting grant funding, the whole purpose there was so that we can fund this development. We don't need to worry about profit margins or generating revenue. That's not what we're about. We're about releasing open source code and helping others integrate it, like these big crypto tax software vendors like Coinly and Crypto Tax Calculator and all the various softwares out there. We're giving them kind of a medium to just tap into Terra data and offer this as a service to their customers. And us being open source, we obviously encourage these vendors to integrate our code base within their infrastructure, but we're also providing APIs for them to just do this using our infrastructure. But you know,
which is awesome. That probably dovetails into a common question, which is everybody's always asking, like, what software should I use? Like, and I'm sorry if you had something that you want to finish up before we get to that.
Yeah, by all means. I want to just say one more thing there, like, because coming from this perspective of a builder who worked on this, you know, even like way prior to even getting a grant for this, like, there isn't like a lot of incentive other than I need this for myself and the community needs this. So like, I think anyone working on this, including competitors to Traktera like Stake.tax, I think we're all working towards a noble cause. And, you know, while there is some overlap with Traktera and Stake.tax, you know, I think the whole idea of what we're working towards is to make tax reporting easier and kind of take a shift from these big vendors and build these open source solutions that do it for the various communities that we support.
Absolutely. And even at the very least, I mean, they're for profit. We don't expect them to turn into nonprofits. It kind of forces them to be a little leaner and meaner and more competitive, even if they are for profit, which is cool. So I know I saw you kind of tweeting some stuff or mentioning Coinly. Is that kind of the recommended, or is that what Traktera is going to integrate best with? Because I'm sure a lot of people have this question, like, what tax software should we get?
So it's funny you bring that up. So I don't want to say that Coinly is the best solution. I want to just point out two other solutions that have actually taken more of an effort to integrate Traktera. CoinPanda is one of them. They actually have instructions on their website to use the beta version of Traktera and to get a CSV out of that and to import it into CoinPanda. So I'm assuming they've spent effort there, you know, integrating that CSV. They haven't contacted me. I haven't worked with them at all, but I am going to reach out to them and ask them if they want an API for that. And then we're also working with Crypto Tax Calculator, which, you know, another great software that took the initiative, kind of reached out. They were like, oh, you know, what are you working on? And can we help you? You know, can you help us and can we help you? And they are working with us to integrate our APIs. Hopefully that will be something we launch in a few weeks. So
that's cool.
I don't want to like shill a particular software. I will say, like, for me, I use Coinly because that's what I've used for 4 years, and I ain't redoing 4 years of fucking data.
And so that actually brings up a good question. So once you kind of have it in a form, it's not easily portable to another software. So, I kind of figured it would be.
It depends on the complexity of your transactions. I will say, like, one thing I struggle with a lot with Coinly is like my 2017 data, like, because the markets were so volatile back then, like, they fucked up a lot of the pricing on some of the trades, and so I've had to go in and like correct it manually. And then I've also had issues when you're importing hundreds of thousands of transactions from exchanges, like, I would say half the softwares just don't fucking work. Coinly does a good job, but even it struggles with my transaction volume. Like, for me, it would just be such a nightmare to move. I mean, for someone who maybe has like 2,000 transactions in total, and maybe it's like a few hours of reconciliation, I don't think it's a big deal. But from my perspective, it's just not an option.
Okay. Well, so listen, I know a lot of people, most people are coming here because they want some really cool tax strategies. And I think I have some of that, but I do want to do some CYA disclosure stuff. Obviously, nobody should rely on tax advice, legal advice, investment advice, blah, 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 blah. You all understand that. I did want to talk a little bit about my background because I'm not an accountant. However, I did pass something called the EA exam, which is called Enrolled Agent. So it's actually directly through the IRS. So technically I'm an IRS agent, but it's not the type you're thinking. If you look up enrolled agent, it's actually almost like, it's like a CPA, but you're not going through the CPA board. You're actually going directly to the IRS to be able to have the ability to, whether it's file taxes or even represent people in tax court. Now, I don't do my own taxes. I don't want to do anybody else's taxes. I'm not starting a tax business. And there is so much, the tax code is so freaking convoluted. It's a nightmare. And they do that just to keep probably an entire business, an entire industry in business, not to mention all the, you know, lawyers that draft all this stuff and change it every 4 years. So I do keep up with it. I kind of geek out on it. Like when Tax Cuts and Jobs Acts happened at the end of 2017 during Christmas, I was geeking out, and my family's like, "What? Why are you on your phone reading about taxes? So like, it's Christmas. Like it's, I like puzzles and strategy. And to me, this is kind of one of the most overlooked things in wealth building. Let's just say facets of wealth building. Everybody's trying to find the next best trade, the next best swap, the next best chain, the next best LP to try and eke out a few extra percent. But if you're losing somewhere between 15 to 50 plus percent of your wealth in poor tax decisions, how are you really doing? And then that's where the saying comes in. It's not what you make, but what you keep. That being said, we're so new in crypto. And I heard this because I actually have some TradFi clients that have been undergoing an audit for ages. And it's just going too slow, and they just want resolution. And their tax advisors are saying, like, look, just take the cheap float. Like, even if you have to pay interest, the interest is so cheap. Like, if you get a bad decision, just take the cheap float for now, because the IRS apparently has put containers, like shipping containers, in a parking lot to deal with all the unopened mail they have. So if we think that they're going to just be like Johnny on the spot and come out with like quick and prompt and swift decisions on crypto, you're freaking dreaming. But it's the way that the tax code works is it's our job to give accurate, non-fraudulent reporting to the best of our knowledge and interpretation, given the information we have. And if you never get audited and you never get challenged, so be it. And as soon as you file a return, the last thing you want to do is not file, because those are some pretty stiff penalties. It could be up to 5% per month. I think they cap you at like 25%. That's just for not filing, plus an extra 0.5% a month for not paying. So you, when you file, you avoid the big penalties, but you also start the clock on their statute of limitations to challenge the data that you're putting forth. So everybody needs to pay their taxes. I'm not advocating anybody evade taxes, but a lot of this in crypto is left to interpretation. That's some of the stuff that we're going to talk about. And Pappy and I didn't script this. We've been DMing back and forth, but we haven't spent any time. And I have some questions for him, because it's like there's a lot of stuff that's a super gray area that he's actually delved deeper in, way deeper in than I have. So I'm as excited as you guys. And I honestly don't know what's going to come of this conversation, but I do have some cool strategies, because I just did some brushing up on just like what people are saying, including like Coinly and CoinTracker, and they all have blogs, and I was kind of reading some of it, and I did come up with some cool ideas, but I don't want anybody to rely on them as gospel. Everybody needs to do their own research and check it with their own tax advisor. So with that, let's start with just how crypto is taxed. So it's taxed as property, not as currency, which is important because, first of all, I think that's just the dumbest name in the world, cryptocurrency. I think it stunts the growth because people are like, it's never going to replace money, even though we know it could. It just sounds too good to be true. Well, from a tax standpoint, it is not currency, because if you have currency, you can make all kinds of trades with currency and not have it be a capital transaction or a taxable event. But with crypto, it is. Like, for example, like there's a BTC Luna pair. And even though I'm using BTC as currency, so to speak, say to buy Luna, like I actually did that on that chart when it dipped in December, when we were in the 50s in December, that's not considered currency. It's not considered, sometimes people use the words like-kind exchange. It's actually considered you're selling BTC for a gain or a loss. And then you have to kind of translate the phantom dollar value, and that's establishing your basis in the new purchase of the new capital asset, the new property that you're purchasing, in this case, which is Luna. So there's all kinds of death by a thousand cuts taxes, so to speak. And that's the other beauty of paying in UST. Even though that is another cryptocurrency, at least we don't really need to worry about that going up and down in value, since it's a stable coin. So that helps. But like people doing stuff on MetaMask and just transacting with ETH, like it's currency with NFTs, they have a shit ton of transactions. And it's their job. I don't know if there's a Pappy equivalent on MetaMask that is doing this for them, or there's trackers and software. Honestly, I don't know. but it's there. The burden is on them to go and find that data. Did you want to say something about that?
Yeah, just on that. I will say transaction support for Ethereum is really good on exchange on crypto tax vendors like Coinly and just pretty much all of them. They all support Ethereum, and they do a decent job at parsing Ethereum transactions. And I would even go further to say that this year, in I would say the past like month, to be honest, I've seen a lot of softwares start offering support for Polygon, Phantom, and Avalanche. So, I mean, it is getting easier. I also have a shit ton of transaction volume on Avalanche and Phantom and all that. I use vendors for most of my transactions, but some of them I just go in there, I wipe them out, and then I build a CSV and import, corrected trades that are generated through software that I write for specific actions that I'm performing on the blockchain.
And I think that's really important, because if you ever do get challenged, and some of us will get challenged, if you ever do get challenged, it's on you to maintain records. So like Pappy said, it just because somebody has a company that does tax software doesn't mean it's right. And so he's just taking that information and then he's correcting it and being ethical about it. Like, that's usually going to be good enough to stand. Like, auditors, they were on a crazy tear where they were hiring a bunch of auditors. Well, what happened is, because like I said, I have some clients that are undergoing a really high net worth audit and know of other advisors that are doing the same. The word on the street is this: that the really slick, old school, not slick, but the really seasoned auditors are gone, and you're getting all these noobs, and a lot of people that are getting audited have to start over and like basically start over with their own audit because they were like at whatever the 5-yard line, and now they're just going all the way back to the 20 with the new auditor, and they don't really know what they're looking at. And that's not even with crypto. So it's good for you to maintain records in the format that you understand it. And obviously, if you get caught defrauding or whatever, those penalties get a lot steeper. But as long as you're putting forth the best effort to substantiate what you paid in tax and why, even if they find that you underpaid, those penalties are 0.5% per month. So we're talking 6% annually, which we know we can get a better rate right now on Anchor, but it's not really the end of the world. And like I said, with my clients getting audited, it's almost like a cheap float for them. So at any rate, did you want to say something else on that?
I actually wanted to ask a kind of a tax question to you, Hutch, something that maybe I've thought about and a practice that I use, because it's really not a substantial amount of money and it wouldn't make a difference in an audit. But I think, especially when CeFi is on here talking about grid bots, grid bots are a tax nightmare, and I don't know if many people who use them realize that. Specifically, KuCoin grid bots are especially bad as far as like reporting goes, because all the transactions are done in sub accounts, and those sub accounts don't return transactions through the API, and I don't even think you can get them through the UI. I think there's like some weird process you have to go through to get sub account transactions. So it creates quite a nightmare. And I mean, what I ended up doing is I calculated the difference of what I put in, what I get out, and I calculate cost basis and profits that way, losses as well. And I just aggregate it all into a couple lines. Mm-hmm. But I think that's a pretty valid approach. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I actually read some stuff about this, that like they want you to get every single transaction, and that's what they're going to say. But if you show you made every best effort to do so, and that you can't, and that's the best you can do, that's probably going to get accepted as the best you can do. And I will say this, having gone through audits with other clients, that a lot of times it comes down to almost like a deal making at the end, right? It's like the IRS is saying, hey, they're being really aggressive, like you owe X, and the taxpayer is saying, no, I owe Y. Or Z, and then it's like, hey, let's meet in the middle. Let's do Y. If you pay Y, we'll call it good. Like, a lot of times that happens. So I could see, as long as you could substantiate that you really gave the best effort to get the things that they want, and it's just impossible, and then you did something reasonable like that, you're probably going to be fine. Like, another example is like RMDs. So a lot of times and for those that don't know, that's clients that are over, used to be 70 and a half. They kicked up the year. But if they don't take random require minimum distributions from their IRA. The tax on that was 50%. It's like the government wants the tax revenue from that IRA. So they have these force outs, if you will. And if you didn't do it, you're going to pay 50% tax. Well, a lot of times these are older people, they forgot, and the accountants just filed it the next year and just said, hey, whoops, sorry, we forgot. Here's the tax we didn't pay last year, but here it is. And the IRS let it go. So if you're making a reasonable effort, it's not like this really, you're dealing with reasonable people usually. Now, if they feel that you're trying to screw them over, it could be a little more contentious. But if you're really making your best effort, I think you should be fine.
Yeah, I mean, to that point, like these are transactions that are like less than $10. It would be completely unfeasible. There's no API, no automated way to get this data. But I think that really goes to a point, you know, make a best effort. And I'm going to be overpaying in taxes anyway. So if they audit me, fucking joke's on them.
Pappy, I have a saying, and I actually heard this from this old boomer accountant I knew, and I love it. You have to pay your taxes, but you don't have to leave a tip. And I see we got some speakers.
Chevy. Well, but before we jump in, I do want to say, like, I put the link to Tractera.org up at the top of the space if anybody wants to jump in there.
Hey, and I just want to say real quick, I think Seffy's got a question, but before we jump to that, a lot of people are asking me what I'm doing in taxes, and I got one word for you: extension. And here's why. First of all, I like kicking the can on the road. I bought a house during early COVID, and that was the only year that I don't do an extension. Summers are usually a little slower for me, and I can kind of deal with it, even though I usually wait till the end of summer anyway to deal with it. But also, given that the space is so new and there's so little guidance, I think the extra 4 or 5 months, whatever that looks like, when you actually get into the nitty gritty, I think there will be more guidance. I think there will be more precedent, and some of these softwares will improve their APIs, connections to Tractera, all this stuff. So it's kind of like more will be revealed. And remember, as long as you pay on time, if you file an extension on time and you pay the amount on time, it's not going to cost you extra. You know, you're going to have an opportunity cost. If you pay on April 15th, you're not going to get to use that money, even if you file on October 15th, but you won't have that penalty. And if you want to just take the float and don't pay, but you file an extension and you don't pay, the float is 0.5% per month for not paying, if you want to kick the can down the road and use that money along the way.
Sounds like a really cheap loan.
It really is, because they're chained to kind of current interest rates. Like it was more at one time, but since interest rates are so low, it's actually kind of high, like the actual interest component, like that's considered a penalty, that 0.5%. The interest component, like for people that they came to find out, like, hey, you owed a lot more, there's actually an interest component on top of that. And I don't know what it is right now, but I think it's like nil. It's like 1-something%, just because interest rates are so low.
Wow.
Seffy, did you have a question?
I just had a couple of minutes here to cover something. Yeah, what to Pappy's point. So when it comes to various like financial products on some of these exchanges, like bots and, you know, whatnot, the way you want to look at it is this: if you were to run one of these things and export a CSV from, say, KuCoin or Gate or something like that, all you need to know is what do those institutions or exchanges, like if your tax agency went to them and said, hey, what did Pappy spend on your exchange and how much did he make? Whatever output they provide to that authority is pretty much the same as what you're going to be essentially assessed in terms of a penalty theoretically on, right? So what's discoverable? So if you have any doubts about this sort of thing, what you should do is just go to that platform, you know, like, you know, spin up a little bot for, you know, $10 or whatever, let that run for a little while. And then, like, export a CSV and see actually what they're actually doing, right? Before you go crazy. And that will help you figure out, like, you know, what you have to do. Because, like, what Pappy said, where, you know, on KuCoin, you throw $1,000 into a bot and you make, you know, $1,200. He's just saying, I made $200 and called it a day, which is probably sane if KuCoin does not provide every transaction that is in that bot. Right. So whatever your tax agency can get access to is really what you're obligated to ultimately prove one way or the other. That's just my
point. I wouldn't say that, because I would honestly bet that nobody's going to get a response from KuCoin support if they ask for my tax documents. KuCoin won't even give them to me.
Yeah, you're probably right. So that being the case, there's nothing that can be proven one way or the other.
But that's not what we're advocating here. I'm just saying.
Yeah, and it's not a question of advocation. Like, when it comes to bots, keep in mind, it's very similar to a smart contract in that it's whatever that is on the ledger of that particular exchange proves what you did or didn't do one way or the other, right? So if all you do is in a bot, you insert $1,000 and you know, when you exit, it's worth $1,200. You don't even know what the background, you know, transactions are on there. So there's nothing you can report if you don't know, right? It's the same as like an ETF or a mutual fund or something. If I go buy an ETF or a mutual fund, I don't know what the hell they're doing in the background. The IRS doesn't know. Well, they don't really have you keep track of it. And you just have to show your capital gain. So I think exactly what you're saying, though, is if you showed that you made $200 on that transaction and, you know, like you trying to report all the interim transactions might be impossible.
Yeah. I want to bring that to LPs, too, because it's similar with LPs. But before we do, this is something that I found where I was like, ooh, when I was just kind of reviewing all those different blogs. This is kind of scary for all. It's not scary, but it's something that if I didn't let you guys know, we were all kind of on the hook. For those of us that have money on KuCoin, over 10K, you have to, it's not a taxable event, it's just a reporting thing. You have to report Form 8938. It's FBAR, I don't know what it stands. Something like foreign something or other, foreign something asset reporting. I don't even know what it stands for. It doesn't even matter. It has to do with something called FATCA. I always think of fat cat, but it has to, they're scared about money laundering. And so there's no tax, but you need to report that you have over 10,000. And if you don't, and they find out about it, like some of you are off the grid, God bless you. I'm jealous, right? But for those of you that don't really want to try and be off the grid, but didn't know about this, make sure you fill out that form. Now, if you don't keep and you just use it as a pass-through and there's not actually $10,000 sitting on there, I've read some things that say you don't really need to worry about it. So
I don't know if this has changed over the past year, Hutch, because I was reading about this as well. I think like the recommendation out there is to file it because it will be required. I don't know if it's required just now, but I will say like it is a feature of many crypto tax softwares. I know for a fact that Coinly offers FBAR reports that they'll just like, you just export it with the rest of your stuff. So I think a lot of them are supporting that now as well.
Okay. Yeah, it was just something that wasn't even on my radar screen. And I thought, oh, that actually makes a ton of sense. I'm sure Binance is in the same, it's anything foreign. So that probably excludes like a Kraken, a Gemini, a Coinbase. I forget what other, Invest Voyager. I think they're domestic, even though they have an international, whatever, they're an international push. Hey, so about the bond thing, the biggest gray area I found was LPs. And since that's a big part, what a lot of us do, whether it's the Luna UST, the Luna B Luna, whatever, anything on Osmosis, LPs, and I asked you about this a long time ago, and you gave me an answer, and I liked your answer. How are LPs taxed, Pappy?
Right. So the way the standard of how LPs are taxed, and this is based on my own interpretation, and also what is done by, I've used a lot of different crypto tax softwares, even though I do use Coinly. I have probably paid for like 5 different subscriptions over the past like year. I've tested a lot of them. They pretty much, there is like no other way. Let's be clear here. So there's two ways to treat LP transactions that I've seen. There's a way that I do it, and that I think is the standard, is to treat them as swap transactions. So where you have two assets going into an LP pair, you're swapping, you know, one of those assets for half of the LP amount that you receive, and then you're swapping the other asset for the other half of the LP amount that you receive. And that way, it tracks your LP cost basis based on the underlying assets. So when you withdraw and there's profits to be claimed, the calculation is easy if you've treated everything as swaps. Where the other method I've seen is where they're just like treated as like pool deposits. and I don't know if this is valid, but like I've seen it, where transactions are treated as pool deposits, and then you would have to like manually calculate the difference of what you put in and what you pulled out, and then claim profits on that. I will say, like, whatever method you choose, obviously, you know, you have to make your case to the IRS. I think either it could be reasonable, but you'd have to apply it like universally across all your trades.
I think that's really smart. And this is something where it gets really sticky, and it sucks that the IRS puts us in this position with no guidance, and this could go on for years, and they can come out and kind of declare something and say, oh, you owe all these back taxes. Now, obviously, since they didn't have guidance, you're not going to get, as long as you have a clear legal opinion on why you did it, not like an official legal opinion, like you pay a law firm, but like you did some homework, you tried to report it the right way, and there's really conflicting opinions. So I think, to Pappy's point, you could probably take either stance, but I think you do have to be prepared that if they just come in, they may never come out and just kind of accept whatever anybody gives them and just be happy with it. But if they come out and say, nope, it wasn't path one, it was path two, you know, there's a chance that they, if you're the one that gets audited, that they have you go back and amend those returns and no back taxes and, you know, the cheap penalties that we talked about and the cheap interest that we talked about. That is a path, so, but yeah, go ahead.
Let's be clear. I mean, like, where I think the second option, where like treating them as like pool deposits, I personally don't like that option, but like where it would make sense, if you had a lot of unrealized gains that you were to then LP, and you didn't want to realize gains on that LP transaction, but you would have to like plan all of your transactions prior to that and after that around, you know, wanting to do that. I really do think like treating them as swaps is like the right answer.
It could be, but Pappy, like, let's take the Luna UST LP, or it could be the Luna B Luma. Like you get a certain amount of LP tokens, and it's the same as they go in. And when they go out, it's just that what that token represents is just more Luna and B Luna, or more Luna and UST, or whatever it is. Maybe it's less of you, like whatever it is, like to treat it as a swap for an LP token. The LP token at that point is really just kind of a ledger token. It's just like kind of a ledger saying, hey, this is your cut of the pool, so to speak.
Like, well, where it gets weird, Hutch, is, and this isn't something very common in the Terra ecosystem, not really even common in Ethereum, but I mean, there are places where LP tokens are, you know, swapped against like stablecoin pairs. And that's where things get really weird. So I hear what you're saying, and I think there's a valid case to be made there. Like, don't get me wrong, I think you could probably argue both cases with the IRS, and they would probably say both are fine. But I think, like, like this kind of goes to like into the B Luna and Luna discussion, right? Because like I would argue that's a pool deposit, but then like you can take the N Luna and LP it and swap the N Luna for PSI, and then it gets a little weird, because then like for your tax reports, are you just gonna like rename N Luna to B Luna so that way it tracks your cost basis correctly? Like it gets to be like unfeasible technically, like when you really try to get creative with some of this stuff.
I see. I admit, I don't know. I don't know if that is like overly created, because technically N Luna is just in Phil Do Baggins. He's on here. He told me about that. N Luna is technically a ledger token that just represents the exact amount of B Luna token. And for me, I know, like, for me, that's kind of where I draw the line. Like, if there's a swap and I can trade, sometimes I can trade one Luna for 1.02 B Luna, and sometimes I could trade it for 1.01, and sometimes I could trade it for 1.04. I understand why that's a swap and that's a taxable event. But N Luna and B Luna, like, at no time will I get a different amount. They're always the same amount, aren't they?
Well, there's also arbitrage with N Luna and like Luna. Like, if PSI goes up and the N Luna PSI pair, you know, it becomes an arbitrage there. I've seen these arbitrage.
Yeah, Hutch, real quick, if I could interrupt, Hutch, they can't be the same, if you remember what we were talking about, just because then that swap discrepancy that we looked at with, like, the N Luna versus B Luna swap, that wouldn't exist if it was, like, a perfect one-to-one.
Sure, but you can always exchange it for one-to-one right away without a 21-day burn or bond or anything else. Like, I think right. that's And I don't know how many people are using Endluna, so we probably don't need to spend a ton of time on that. But that's for me, that's kind of like I have the wrapped Luna from Coinbase coming over issue. And so I'm not treating that as a swap because I always get the exact same amount. Like always. I always get the exact same amount.
There's actually a difference there. There's no exchange where you can swap Ethereum wrapped Luna for native Luna.
KuCoin.
You can't do it on KuCoin. I mean, you can deposit and then withdraw on KuCoin. I think for all intents and purposes, wrapped Luna is Luna. But it's different from BLUNA because you can swap N Luna for BLUNA if you wanted to and TerraSwap, and it would just route through like the PSI pairs.
So I see what you're saying. So you're saying my wrapped argument actually holds because there is no arbitrage anywhere.
Correct.
I see what you're saying. You could be right. And this is like a perfect example of what I was talking about as far as there's so many different opinions. And I think as long as you make an argument for one, kind of like this guy that's doing challenging the staking is doing, I think there's a good, really good chance that you're just going to pass an audit and it's not going to go to tax court. If you could just say, this is what it is, and there's no precedent to it, and you have some auditor coming in saying, well, wait a second, what's going on here? Like, if you actually have a coherent argument and some good records.
Right. Marty, I was going to jump in, but Marty's hand's up. Go ahead, Marty.
Okay, I'm unmuted now. Man, I'll tell you what. I've been audited twice, and basically 1 year after the other. And the IRS wanted me bad, and they hired the just returned CFO of Hershey Foods to do it. Okay. And he was a bright guy. I mean, he was a super bright guy with, 35 years of experience. And to have this kind of discussion with him, I don't think he would have ever got it. So I literally can't imagine having this conversation. I'm sorry to add a little humor to this, but I had to.
This is really reasonable thing to bring up because I think about this. Like, I make a best effort to do my tax reporting, and like maybe things aren't 100% perfect. Maybe I'm aggregating transactions where I shouldn't be or whatever. I don't know whatever case they try to make against me, but like, good fucking luck.
Yeah, I people are people too, so I wouldn't kind of have like kind of go in with the chip on your shoulder. Like, I would go in with the pappy, hey, I'm really doing my best efforts, and here's what I have, and here's why I think that's true. And I think it's like, people are still human, and there's a little killing with kindness. If they kind of feel like you have a chip on their shoulder and you want to get them or whatever, maybe they're going to have a bigger heart on to come after you. But if they're just kind of curious and you have good reporting and a good argument, I think a lot of people are going to be fine if they're putting forth the effort and they actually have the wherewithal to explain why they did what they did.
Yeah, and Hutch, to be clear, I don't mean go figure it out on your own. I'm happy to provide my transaction history, but what you do with it is up to you.
On that note, just to take a stance that I don't think I've heard yet, and this is a really good discussion, by the way, the raw amount of data that they're going to have to deal with if every person says, okay, here's my transactions, especially if you deal with auto compounders and various like mechanics, like it's completely unfeasible. So I'm not telling anyone what to do with their money, but they're going to have a hard time like processing all of this data to figure all of this out.
Hey guys. That reminds me. Oh.
Just quick comment on what Marty said about the CFO thing, right? So IRS might be having people on their payroll who are experts in their own area, and they are working for years and know inside out of everything, right? But when it comes to this space, and I know this because my past is like chartered accountancy, so I know how that's going to end up with. So one of my friends who was in Belgium, and he wanted to buy a house, almost like $1 million in cash. And he couldn't find the off-ramp facility with HSBC. That's the only bank having off-ramp available. And he was trying to find a way out. And then the local tax company over there asked him, how many transactions you have done? And he just piled up the whole CSV worth of like 50, 60 pages and sent it to them. Like, here's my transactions. go through them, let me know what I need to pay. I'll pay right now and I get my cash out. He was ready to pay the taxes, but this guy don't want to go through all these 60 pages worth of transactions. So they said, okay, pay 15% of it, whatever profit you made, and you get out of here. Right? That's
yeah,
a simple
right.
thing that's
yeah.
going to end up,
yeah,
no, right? Who's gonna ask you where you converted your BETH or where you converted your BSOL to BETH and then you converted to N Luna and Y Luna, and then you split to C Luna and when what end up, you know, after the prison thing? You're not going to spend your payroll person who's like on like clock for per hour charge, right? How many people you need?
And the problem now is you can actually show the transactions too. So like
exactly.
the sheer amount of data is like a problem, but Pappy was, or a couple of people are.
So in short, what you can do is what Hutch mentioned, right? File the taxes, provide whatever you have on hand, plus minus, this is your put, this is you came out with, this is your long-term still sitting in the portfolio or in the wallet, and that's pretty much it. What is the net profit? Let them figure out how much you need to pay.
Simple. Yeah, I think we're beating a dead horse with this. I think we're all on the same page. Everybody gets it. Everybody's got to put forth their best effort. I did have some tax strategies to talk about, but I know some people have some other questions. So
yeah, it looks like Dan has something. He's been
cool.
Raising his hand.
What's
for
up,
a bit.
Dan?
Yeah, sorry, guys. I have like an audio delay, so it's hard for me to butt in naturally. But yeah, so like one thing that I think will absolutely happen is there's only like a couple trillion in crypto right now, right? As soon as there's a whole bunch more, like 30 trillion or 50 trillion or 100 trillion, like the IRS is going to be super incentivized to try to tax that. So they are going to scale up, hire tons of people, pay like huge salaries for crypto experts. So like I think even though it is super complex, they're absolutely going to go after it because it's going to be a huge cash cow for them. So that's kind of like my opinion on how it's going to go in the future. But yeah, I also had a question that I was curious about when we are talking about liquidity pools. The way that I've always kind of thought about like how they should be tracked in tax software, which I don't know if any of the tools are doing this right now, but say that you deposit like UST and Luna to a pool, categorizing that as an internal transfer just between two different wallets, so like $50 in of Luna, $50 in of UST. And then if you end up pulling out like more Luna, the 50 would offset your original, and then say that there's like five extra, then that would be counted as interest or ordinary income or whatever it ends up being.
I saw one argument that it could be done that way. It was like one out of like five or six that said it should probably be the other way that Pappy said. But what do you, I was thinking of doing the same thing. What do you think about that, Pappy? Because that's really what it is. Like your LP tokens, you're never going to get more of them in the Luna UST pool.
Well, that's,
what do you think about
that? I mean,
that's
pretty much what we were kind of discussing, right? I mean, that was the second option. I personally don't have preference over that, just because I've been doing it the other way this whole time, and I'm not going to redo my ports the past 3 years. But I mean, yeah, like I think you could easily argue that when you say internal transfer, like that's what I mean when I say pool deposit. Pool deposits are not taxable transactions.
Got it.
Okay. Yeah, I wasn't sure how that would work really, because like some LP systems like Osmosis and stuff, right? They're like paying you they pay out your rewards to a dedicated wallet. But don't things like TerraSwap just like auto compound and add it back in? Yeah, I imagine that would get really complicated to track.
I don't think you can.
It just compounds into the LP.
Yeah, this is all ignoring the fact that they don't KYC digital wallets, but like again, not tax advice.
So again, where this breaks down, right, is like where you have something like Beefy Finance, which is a yield aggregator, where you deposit these LP transactions and you get a Beefy staking token. And so like now there's a whole nother layer of freaking complexity to it.
Yeah, they talked about that.
Beefy's okay.
That token,
I used Beefy way back on Matic. Beefy's okay. Sorry, go ahead.
When you get a third token.
If that Beefy token has value, then you also have to like start bringing in things like FICA, right? Because like you absolutely owe self-employment insurance on the, or sorry, self-employment on that, right?
So it's, well, yeah, I don't believe so. I think it's just investment income at that point, and that the third token that you get is just income
That's this generated. So obviously gets out of control for them so quickly to me. Like, I don't see how they're going to like the original stuff we were talking about. All seemed like that was an amazing conversation, but they're not going to touch auto compounders and stuff. Like, it's completely unfeasible. Well, in my opinion,
it's the kind of same theme here, right? Because like when you talk about treating LP transactions as pool deposits where you receive the LP token and that LP token is the token of receipt, where that starts to break down is when you can trade the LP token or do other things with the LP token, like deposit it into Beefy, and then you get a staking derivative that accrues value, and then you could potentially trade that. I mean, it gets to
Right.
So that's where
even on like MailTrader, you have something like that. Like Luna HODL is a wrapped token of a wrapped LP.
Yeah. So I mean, that's where I think like treating everything as swaps is the easiest way. If you're gonna do it the other way, you're gonna be doing a lot of manual reconciliation. I think it's still valid. Again, you know, seek your own tax advice, but I think it's going to be a lot more work.
Hey, so can you break that down for me? Like, I don't understand the treating it as swap. Say that, like, I'm not doing a single asset LP. Like, I already have some Luna and some Terra World or whatever. Right. And I put both of those assets into the pool. I haven't done a swap yet. And when the swap happens on chain, is that recorded? Like, that someone used you?
No. So when you take two assets and you receive an LP in return, a way to track this, to track the cost basis of the LP token, is to treat the whole transaction as a swap. On chain, it is not a swap. It is an LP transaction. So you would have to have a parser take the transaction and break it down into swap transactions. And in the case of an LP transaction where there's two tokens and you're receiving an LP token in return, it would be a swap, two swaps, where you know one asset in the LP pair is swapped for half of the LP amount that you received, and the other asset in the LP pair is swapped for the other half of the LP token that you received.
I knew this was going to be a sticky one. I am prepared to go kind of long, but I'm not going to do like Sefi till midnight. So I think what we ought to do is, if people have questions, because I do want to take other people's questions, let's let them up as speakers and have them raise their hand. Sure. If those of you that are up here, if you guys don't have questions, let's move on. Because I do want to,
I got to get fishing, so I'll step down, Hutch. But this is a great conversation. I'm gonna be listening. So this has been awesome. I'm gonna step down though.
Thanks.
I can let it go. I'd love to chat with our Pappy one on one sometime about it. But yeah, let's. I don't see anyone requesting right now.
I said, Ryan, you asked me.
I have to say one thing, Hutch, and then I'm gonna step down as well.
Okay.
Sometimes you have to just go with the simplicity rather than overcomplicating things.
Well, I think to Pappy's point, you have to be consistent. So if you're gonna go complicated, you got to go all complicated. If you're gonna go simple, you got to go all simple.
You are going simple, correct? Don't mix up, because we are not there yet. That's what I'm thinking. When we are, IRS is not there yet. That's if I have to put it in a simple word.
But you can't cherry pick. You can't cherry pick and go simple over here. I want to take Ryan's question, but I do, talking about swaps, I do have a concept about swaps that could be simpler or could be complicated. Go ahead, Ryan.
Hey, guys. Thanks for everything. So, Poppy, this question is directed more to you. So I went out to track Terra during this call, and I exported, let's see, for Coin Tracker and Coinly, and I tried to upload it to both websites. I'm having an issue with the timestamp or the date and the way it's formatted. So I didn't know if there was.
I'm happy to take a look at that. I think there is some morphing that might need to be done on the date. Like, we just released like 20 minutes before this call. If there's an issue, I will take a look after this call and sort that out. I'm happy to test it myself, but if you got a screenshot you want to send over, feel free.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
We're going to be making a lot of improvements to Track Terra over the next few days. I don't expect, like, right now, like, we're partially usable. Like, it's a demo. Like, you can search through your history. You can see what we're all about. But give us some days to work it out, and it'll be a lot better, like, this time next week.
Any other questions from the audience before I talk about how swaps could be simple or complicated, and then get into some cool strategies that I think you guys will enjoy? Okay. Talk about swaps. So Pappy and I were tweeting about this back and forth. Your standard options are FIFO, LIFO, or HIFO. First in, first out, last in, first out, or highest in, first out. And then there's one more, which is the complicated, which is you can identify specific lots, which is complicated, but obviously the most surgical will probably yield the best results because you have ultimate flexibility. And what that means is if you have a bought, you dollar cost average into, say, Luna a bunch of different times like I did, and even if you had it across different exchanges, different wallets, it doesn't really matter where the exact transaction took place, like a buy or sell or a swap, whether it happened on one wallet or the other, or an exchange over here, you can actually match those up. And I did want to hear from Pappy at some point, like really how that would look. Because what I plan to do is almost like if you take a piece of paper and fold it in half, and you have kind of all your buys from call it low to high on the left, or whether you're doing Excel or whatever. And then over here, you have all your sells from low to high on the left. You could really just kind of surgically match those to most people will probably want to generate the least amount of tax. But I was talking about this with the VGX folks. There's some people that maybe have carry forward losses from prior years, because when you lose, when you have lots of capital losses, you can only deduct $3,000 per year. Now, when you have a more, when you have capital gains, you have to pay it all that year. So I always say the government's your silent partner, but they're like a preferred partner. Like they're your trading partner. So when you win, they want a piece of everything. When you lose, though, they're only going to subsidize you $3,000 at a time. So some people have these banked up capital losses. It could even be from selling real estate. This is just property. And so if you have massive capital losses, maybe you want to absorb some of that in these swaps, right? Like it's not always about minimizing tax. Maybe you want to kind of accelerate that to get higher basis or just kind of use them up. Most people want to defer tax or create as little tax as possible. If you want simple, most likely HIFO is probably going to yield the best results, wouldn't you say, Pappy, like on average?
I will say the approach I take here, and I think like this could go even beyond like HIFO, LIFO, FIFO, like it's specific identification, like whatever the fuck you want to use, as long as it makes sense, right? So, but most of the crypto softwares, they support HIFO, LIFO, FIFO. And what I typically do is in the past, I've used LIFO. You know, we do talk about consistency, but in the past, like my transaction volume was like nothing like what it is this year. So, I mean, I'm happy for them to try and make that argument and make me pay for those previous years, but
you can change year to year. You can change actually year
to
year.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, okay. You can. Yeah.
Well, the approach I'm taking this year is I am getting all of the data in there, which is still an ongoing process. I've been working on this since January. And I will go through and I will calculate my taxes using each method and determine what looks the best.
So for Tractera, are you just going to have like some easy buttons to where we could just like, nope. Just say, so bummer.
Let's be clear here. So Tractera provides the data that you then take elsewhere and then combine it with all your other trading history. And then you apply this analysis.
So knowing the other software, do they have it? Because I know accountants and they have tax software, and you can just kind of like for AMT, it's like you can run it this way, and then you can run it for AMT, and like you can run it every which way.
Yeah. All the big ones can run it any which way. And there's even like you could take it even further. Like there's some that like will only track cost basis on coin on certain exchanges and stuff. Like there's a lot of different settings involved in calculating your taxes, and it varies from vendor to vendor. I will say pretty much all of them that I use support, you know, various identification of trades like HIFO, LIFO, FIFO. I don't think that's going to be an issue. I have seen some that support like a whole like wide variety of them. And that was something I wanted to play around with. Like, ooh, what kind of obscure specific identification can I use here?
Well, that's cool because you may not even need to do that. So going back to Manaviz's point is you could just run FIFO, LIFO, HIFO and just kind of just easy button those. And if you get a good enough result and it's good enough, we're done here.
Right.
Right. It's like, oh, I'll take LIFO. I'll take HIFO. Yeah. But if all of them are kind of producing an adverse result to what you want, then maybe it's worth you taking half a day, putting everything, like you're going to provide the data, you can get the data from whatever, KuCoin, Coinbase, of just buys and sells, and maybe you just copy and paste everything onto a spreadsheet, sort it by highest and low, and do what I said. It's kind of like when you're a kid, right? It's like match the right answer, and there's lines going up, down, sideways, and you try and do that. But you may not need to if as long as we can aggregate the data and see. So that was the only other thing I wanted to bring up with swaps, since a lot of us are into that.
So I will say,
I had a thought on this too.
Go ahead.
Like maybe going into a little bit more about like when someone would use these strategies. So like, for example, HIFO, highest in, first out, like it's advantageous most likely because it's going to have the shortest gain, right? Because like it has like the less time to change in volatility, where something like last in, first out would be way more volatile, right? Like, so is there...
I think where you really need to pay attention is if you plan on taking long-term gains as opposed to short-term gains on your assets. And then like using HIFO gets really weird. And it would be like a pain in the ass for you to figure out like what your long-term assets are. I mean, these softwares will figure it out for you, but like you like doing the trades, like it'll mess up your whole like plan there. And so if you're holding assets and you do a lot of trading and you're really counting on like long-term gains, I would keep it simple and go with like last in, first out.
So is there almost like a arbitrage opportunity in here, like with the new year? Like if you do HIFO 1 year and you like realize a loss and then you're like, oh yeah, but next year I'm going to switch to LIFO and I basically get to avoid all this kind of tax that I would have paid if I was staying with HIFO.
Go ahead, Hutch.
Well, it depends on your situation, Dan. But what I was going to say, I was going to use this to dovetail into wash sale rules. And Marty, I see your hand. You have your hand up. If it has to do with this, before I shift gears, you want to jump in?
Mine was going to be wash rules.
Okay. Okay. Cool. So, so what I did at the end of last year, and I put out a video like year-end crypto tax planning moves on my channel towards the end of last year, because the wash sale rule counts for securities, but not for property. And technically crypto is still property. Now, the IRS has a horrible habit of kind of like, they haven't said, I heard that wash sale rules were probably going away, but they haven't said it is. So it's something that I like to wait till the end of the year. And I got to the end of the year last year and found it was still there. What a wash sale rule is, what they don't let you do is, let's just use stock. You can't sell a Vanguard S&P 500 fund at the end of 2021. And then 30 days later, I think it's actually, I want to say it's 60 days, but let's just say 30 days later, for sure, you can't buy it again and harvest the loss in the last year and then pick up the same asset. They're just going to go ahead and adjust your basis accordingly. They say, I see what you're doing. And it only counts for losses. If you, again, this is like the government, they want a piece of all the gains, but they don't want to subsidize you with the losses. If it's a gain, they'll let you do it. But if it's a loss, they're not going to let you do it. But that wasn't true for crypto. So like my KDA, QRDO, Render, all that kind of stuff was hammered. Luna was off the charts. And I knew I had done some swaps on the way up. And so it didn't matter whether I did FIFO, LIFO, HIFO. I was screwed no matter what on my Luna. And so what I did is I calculated the commission on KuCoin. I think it worked out to be, if I paid with KCS token, it was like $4 per thousand round trip. And what I did is I just like market sold KDA, market bought KDA. What did I do? I just harvested. I just locked in a bunch of losses to offset gains from those Luna swaps that I did. And those are going to hold. As of now, there's nothing against it, but it's like, don't try this at home, or at least don't try this at home yet. We don't know if that's going to hold. I mean, worst case scenario, you end up giving KuCoin some money
I mean, Hutch, wouldn't it take them like a whole like year cycle to come out with new tax laws? Like, they're not going to come out in like December next year and say, oh, you know all those wash trades you made? Oh, well, those count.
Or, not for 2021, but they actually have done that in the past, like with estate planning. And I don't know how many of you follow estate planning, but the estate planning laws sunsetted in 2010 to where for a while there was no estate tax, like literally no estate tax. So it's like, wow, if you're really old and really rich, this is like a good year to die. It's hard to get people too excited about that, but from a planning standpoint, it was awesome, right? But then they kind of retroactively retroactively, that was permanent. Like the estate tax was supposed to go away permanently. And so never trust the word permanent in the tax code. And then they retroactively reinstated it. And we got through an entire year and even some months into the new year before they retroactively put it to the new year. So like there was like a time for like, I forget if it was like 3, 4, or 5 months where you literally in 2011 didn't know what was going to occur. You just had no idea. Yeah. So they can do that. It's just, it sucks. But that's what I'm saying. Just, I think I am good because for sure it was property and not a security. So my 2021 is good. What I'm saying though, is if we get a major crypto dump, I think it's still a good strategy to do. If you can do it for $4 on KuCoin, or we know that on, you know, at least on Terra, the commission's pretty nominal. And worst case scenario, you pay a little commission and then you possibly have this loss you can bank. Possibly not if they come out with retroactive sweeping legislation.
So I guess,
on Terra, you can use the Minter function to almost like go to UST and back for almost free with Luna and stuff, probably like 25 cents, right?
It's not always free.
Yeah, a little slippage and whatever. It's still nominal. It's a small conversation if there's a good opportunity.
Well, so I don't mean using the liquidity pools. I mean using the actual native function of the chain burning mechanism.
Yeah, I think there is like a Tobin tax or whatever. It's small, but it's definitely not zero.
You can always also pay your son or your daughter for something, and then for him to like you know pay for rent for a year in the basement, right?
So you're stealing my thunder a little bit, but go on. Go on. No, this is good.
I'll let you do that, but I want to go back to 2010 for a second. It's like
the
people that did that change was not the IRS, it was the legislature. Okay. And in that period of time in 2010, when this was the legislature came back and did essentially a retroactive tax. And at that point in time, if you remember, there was this hope that there'd be some billionaire family that died in that period of time that would challenge that constitutionally. So retroactive tax issues are a really interesting constitutional issue in the United States. So my guess, given the level of money and power and aggravation with the government, any attempt to do that is going to be in the courts. But anyway, just...
Yeah, we'll sic summa lama or sefi on them.
I was thinking more like, Elon Musk.
Hey, so Hutch, I got a question about the whole wash trading stuff, right? So how does wash trading rules apply when you hedge your positions using like weird derivatives? Like if you wanted to like realize gains in December, but you didn't want to sell your Luna, and so you hedged your Luna position or like a portion of your Luna position with like a Luna 3S or something, like does that rule even apply there? Because you're trading like a completely different asset.
Yeah, that's a good question. So if you actually look into it, and it's been a while since I looked into the texture, but if you're looking into a direct derivative of it, I believe it's still going to get sucked in with the wash sale. But what a lot of people would do is like in my S&P example, they would sell the Vanguard S&P mutual fund, 5 ticker mutual fund, and then they would buy SPY, right? And so something from a totally different company, there could be tracking error. It kind of goes back to our swaps. Like B Luna is not the same as Luna, right? So I think that's your argument. Because this is great when there's like a, hey, IRS, you can't have it both ways, right? Like, because Sefi wants to say that, swaps are just like-kind exchanges. Well, like-kind exchanges deal with like real estate, a 1030, there's actually a code section, 1031, or insurance products, 1035, is a like-kind exchange. You could exchange from this asset to this asset and not recognize any tax. I really think that's an uphill battle going from Luna to Luna.
Okay, well, let's be clear. I mean, on the like-kind exchange, that has already been battled out. Like there was a point in time where you could file your crypto taxes and all your crypto to crypto transactions were like kind, and that was valid. I think it was like 2017. And then they came out and said, no, that's only real estate.
Yeah. So you're preaching to the choir here. I'm not even going to try that one. So, but what I'm saying is, going back to your question, you can't have it both ways. So if you sell Luna and you want exposure to Luna, so you get ST Luna or B Luna, and then you maintain that exposure, right? As far as a 3X, you're probably fine. Again, this is, you're in space. But what they said you couldn't do is, like, let's say you sold SPY in December. I believe what you can't do, and it's been a while since I've looked at this, if you sold SPY in December, you can't like immediately buy a call option at the money on SPY, because it's the same, it's a derivative of the exact same asset. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense.
So I believe that's how it is. I'm going to hedge my bet a little bit because it's been a while since I looked at it, but they don't want, let's just say, similar chain or similar asset derivatives, because they know what you're doing. Like, essentially you're maintaining the exact same exposure. But like, you could sell GLD, a physical gold ETF, right? And you could probably buy SGOL, or you could buy a gold miner ETF. And that's okay. Because it's a materially different asset. So, Marty, unless there was anything else on that, please start with your path down the kid in the basement, because that is actually leading me to a couple of the strategies that are, I think this is what people are really excited about on this call. So talk to me about the kid in the basement.
Well, you know, I'm looking for ways to both wash and transfer, you know, my assets, or transfer my assets to my kids kind of tax-free. So for one, you know, I'm allowed to gift anybody $10,000, right? So.
No. It's much better than that, Marty. It just kicked up from 15 to 16,000.
Oh, you're right.
Per spouse.
The ancient boomer here remembers the old rules. I apologize. Okay. So it's $16,000, and I could do that to everybody in my community, right? I could take the 40,000 people in my town, and my wife could give them $16,000, and I could give them all $16,000.
Can we all ask? Can we all ask where you live so we can? So yes, as long as it's not a transaction or payment for employment that's disguised as a gift. But theoretically, yes, you can gift $16,000 without even filing a gift tax return
every year.
To as many people as you want. Now, I will say you do have to refile a 709, and I don't know all the forms for the gift tax or for all the tax forms, but I remember I did pass the CFP many moons ago, and I remember the mnemonic device was 706 is an estate planning after somebody dies, because six is like you're 6 feet under, and 709 is the gift tax return. It's virtually the same return, and it deals with the same part of the code, but nine for like nine lives. So if you and your wife split gifts, so if you want to hook up one of your kids, your wife could give, you could give $16,000, not even file a return, just give it. And then if they ever come back and challenge it, just say, hey, I'm under the annual exclusion gifting limits. But if you want to do 32 and both you and your wife do it, you have to file a split gift gift tax form, which starts the statute of limitations, but there's no tax on it. They just want to kind of see when you're doing bigger gifts. So go on.
Okay. So the other thing is, there's a number where I don't have to file a 1099, right?
Yes. I don't know what that is, but now you're getting into the thing that's going to piss them off. So I'm just going to try.
Okay. We're not trying to be too meaty here. It's like, I can hire my child to cut my lawn, They're not going to get pissed off at that, right?
Yeah, so if you're going to pay your kids, and this is a really, really good strategy, and this is the place I was hoping you were going, and there is a difference, and so maybe I'll just let you finish your story. So if you're gifting to kids, that's one thing. That's fine. You're gifting, you're avoiding estate tax, you're shrinking your estate by gifting it to kids. It is not a transaction like a swap. Basically, your basis carries over. So yep. What you would want to do is gift your lowest basis Luna or Bitcoin or whatever, just the absolute lowest basis that you don't want to recognize tax on. You would gift that to your kids. Now, if they're still at home or they're in school full time, if they're at home, it's younger than 19. If they're in school full time, it's younger than 24. If they cash that out and it is a substantial number, like even like getting over four figures, they are going to pay tax and it could kick back to your rate. That's called the kiddie tax. And
brother, we can talk. We're going to teach them about Anchor.
That's good.
We're going to not just give them this, which we are,
okay,
but we're going to give it to them in an account that's, you know, on Terra Station, mm-hmm. you know, in Anchor, probably borrow to 15% or 20%, whatever else, with the money and earn, and who knows, whatever you want to do, okay?
This is great. This is one of the strategies I wanted to get into, so please continue. This gifting thing is so big. Continue.
By the way, we talked about this not at all in advance of this conversation, just so everybody knows.
Yeah, no, this is unscripted live.
This is Wicked Minds Think Together, okay?
Yeah, continue.
So I also want to pay them sub that number, okay, of 1099, and do it in UST or do it in Luna, whatever you want, okay? And I've avoided some tax as well. And now let's go to the truly wicked. Okay.
I think you're going to have some issues with that, but that I don't know if that's going to work. But hiring your kids, you can do if you're hiring them and you're using property. Again, that could be a transaction. That could be a transaction because you're not gifting at that point. You're paying for consideration. But continue.
Right. But to me, it's a separate box. Like box A was the gift. Okay. Box B or strategy B is paying people underneath that number. Okay. And, you know, I expect to go into someday, you know, dealing with the IRS, and they're going to say, okay, we agree with A, and, you know, we don't agree with B, okay? You know, we'll fight for a while, and then they'll agree with B because they'll get bored with dealing with me over a three-year period, and I'll pay all their penalties until we agree. So, scenario C is something I'm sure you're all well aware of, is we start playing the NFT game. So does anybody want to discuss the NFT game of selling NFTs?
I actually think you should just not bring that up here.
Okay.
Well, so okay. I think this is going to be advertised as a tax thing. And so let's keep it to tax. And we don't, right? We don't know who all is listening. So
okay. I'm off.
So let's talk about what Marty said, because the first couple of things that he said are very powerful strategies, and they can be used in conjunction together, or they could be used separately. So hiring your kids, as long as they are bona fide doing work, if they're mowing Marty's personal lawn, that doesn't work. That's an allowance. Marty's going to pay income tax on his own income, and he's going to give his kids an allowance. Good for him. He can gift his kids the highest appreciated assets he has. And again, if the kids sell it, there is something called the kiddie tax. And in 2022, if the income, and that includes interest income, short and long-term capital gains, is more than $1,150, then the next $1,150 goes to the kids' tax rate, which is pretty low. So you can get about $2,300 of income that the kid will pay at a very low rate, shifted away from Marty's higher tax rate. Now, what's even more powerful, I think, I think Seffy talked about, you know, giving his or gifting his kids some Atom and then letting the yield off the Atom kind of pay for college. So if you can earn 11, if the kid can earn 1150 tax free and not even file a tax return, like let's just use Luna staking for a second. So what is that? Like you could give the kid like 12,000 a Luna, like more than that, like 15,000 a Luna, $15,000 worth of Luna. No, maybe not. It's somewhere between 10 and 15. I was thinking 7%, but it's more than that now. But you can kid a 10 grand a Luna, gift it, stay under that $16,000, even if it has a very low basis. And the kid could get the staking yield. And staking could be tax-free anyway, but let's just say it isn't for a second. Let's just say they come back and say that it's not. That income is going to be tax-free for the kid. And up to 1150 is tax-free. So you could even just give them, maybe you don't want to give them Luna. Maybe you want to give them low basis LP stuff, right? Maybe Thorchain comes out and you have some super low basis Bitcoin and ETH. And, but you know what? That gets swapped out to Rune, I think, in the background. So that could not pay. You understand what I'm saying? You can give the kid low basis stuff and the first 1150 is going to be tax-free. The next 1150 gets taxed at their rate. And you don't even need to pay an accountant to file a tax return for your kid. There's actually a special form that you can fill out paying kid tax at kid rates on your tax return. So it's just an extra form as opposed to the kid filing their own taxes. So that's $2,300. So basically you could shift appreciating assets that are low basis and generating income, even taxable income, two kids, so a pretty strong number, right? Five figures. And the kid could recognize a bunch of income. I wasn't even thinking about this last year. I wish I would have done this last year. I'm definitely going to do it this year. I have young teenagers. We're going to start talking about cars and stuff like that. Already college is there. And I could just be shifting them to these wallets that are theirs that can continue to compound for them. So that's just the gifting side, which is really, really, really big. The other thing is for those of you that, oh, Dan, you had a question about that. I see your hand up. Sorry, I don't look at this much. So feel free to yell at me.
Yeah, no problem, man. I was going to say one of the other ways is if you have a legitimate business and you can give your kids a legitimate business purpose, like whether they like.
Hold on. I was going to go there. I was going to finish gifting though. But yeah, definitely, oh, gotcha. definitely trying when I get there. I don't know how many people have relatives in foreign countries, but I do. And they may need some help anyway. And so I gifted some of my lowest basis Solana, because that was my first 10X, to my family in another country. And as long as you stay that limit, you're good. I looked around and I couldn't find anything that said, oh, if you're transferring it to foreigners, like literally I found, and I, if somebody knows difference, by all means, let me know. You can gift up to 16,000 to whoever. And again, if you're splitting gifts with the spouse, if you fill out that 709 form and check, hey, we just split gifts, there's no tax due. You didn't do anything wrong. I can do 16. She can do 16. And that puts the IRS on notice to say like, hey, we went ahead and did this for a big number. Do you have a problem with it? You know, speak now or within the next 3 years or forever, hold your peace. Which is really important. Like if you didn't catch earlier, filing is really important. Don't duck out of filing because it stresses you out. Filing is actually, it's like lighting a fuse on a time bomb that they have that amount of clock to kind of challenge it or not. So filing is actually a really powerful tool. Dan, by all means, talk to him about hiring your kids.
Oh, yeah. Well, first of all, I'll say I don't have kids, so I don't have any experience doing this. But I have heard a lot about ways that you can get business deductions. I'm not sure where it comes into the fact, though, that if you're using crypto or property instead of like giving your kids dollars, if that changes it around at all.
I don't think it changes it, but you would recognize a transaction. If you had appreciated, or excuse me, low basis Luna, and you paid them low basis Luna as property instead of currency, you essentially you're selling your Luna, and so you're going to pay tax. So if you were going to pay them in a stable coin where your basis was exactly what it was worth, that's not a problem. But it would be dumb. Or if you just bought some Luna and you paid them in that, it would be dumb otherwise, if that makes sense.
Gotcha. So you would just write it off as a business expense at the market price of Luna the day that you paid them.
Yeah, but this is where reporting comes into play. So if you're going to do a really small amount, it's kind of dumb to do this strategy for a really small amount, because your kids, once they have earned income, they need to file a return. So now all of a sudden, your accounting bill, your bill to your account is going to go up every year. And if you have multiple kids, so you really only want to do it when you have some scale to it. That being said, you shouldn't go too big, because you actually need to keep records. You need to keep records, logs. It's actually, you're supposed to do, I forget the name of the form, but like you're kind of registering and you should like collect payroll tax, do the EIN. If you're a sole proprietor, like you don't actually have a business. Cause here's the other thing. If you're paying them out of your business, like if you're paying them out of like an S corp or whatever, where it's an actual business, you're still going to have to kick in your half of FICA and FUTA and that stuff that you were talking about, the payroll taxes. So you're still going to have to do that half. Where it's really, really sweet, Dan, and I happen to know this, is when you have 1099 income as a sole proprietor. So it could mean you have a single member LLC that's just taxed as a disregarded entity, which means it's just automatically, if you're a single member LLC, you're still basically a sole proprietor. But it's basically, if you just kind of have like a certain amount of 1099 income, or that's all you do and you don't have a corporation, it's really sweet then, because you don't have to pay payroll taxes, but you do need to kind of report what you pay them, and you do need to have records and timesheets, and it does need to be reasonable what they're doing for you. And kind of the rule of thumb is like, I think 7 years old is like really, I want to say seven was the number, seven or eight, somewhere around there is the number. And it's like, really, what is a six-year-old doing for you? Now, that being said, I have known people that have done things, especially in the age of digital marketing, where their kids get a modeling contract because maybe they're all over their website and some marketing materials. So, and that could even work with younger kids. But just know, if you're kind of pushing the envelope there, it is more likely to get challenged. And then we're back to the same conversation. You're going to have to produce records, and there needs to be substance and form, and not considered a sham transaction. And yes, it's a great way to not only shift money to children that Marty's concerned about, but also get a deduction from usually the higher earning, the higher income parent to the lower income bracket kids. And like, if you look at the first bracket, it's a 10% bracket. And the kids do get a standard deduction that is a little bit smaller. Everything's a little bit compressed, but you can shift, call it high four figures, maybe even very low five figures, if you're a high income earning individual, two kids legally, if they're actually providing services for the business and it's recorded, you can shift that at a very tax efficient basis. And that kills a couple birds with one stone. The higher income earning parent earns an income tax deduction. Kid picks it up, some of it tax-free because of standard deduction, and some of it because the first bracket is 10% and then 12%. And if you have an estate tax issue, like some of our friends I'm sure do, then you're actually getting it off your estate as well. So yeah, that's a very, very powerful strategy.
I definitely agree. I did have one other idea that I learned at the Crypto Tax Summit. It's not talking about paying your kids. It's something totally different. So whenever you're ready to transition, I'd love to share that one too.
Yeah, sure. If people have questions, by all means, you can jump on a speaker and raise your hand. But yeah, go ahead. Shift gears. That's all there is to say about that one.
Yeah. So with this one, the idea is, okay, so you have some unrealized gains on crypto. What you can do is you can realize the gains, and then within 180 days, you can purchase real estate in an opportunity zone. Like if you have that kind of skill set and you're interested in that. And if you hold that property for 10 years, your descendants will inherit that at the stepped up basis. So you basically avoid, because the property you buy will offset any of the gains that you made. So say you made $1 million in gains, you buy $1 million property in an opportunity zone. Not sure that's likely to happen in that zone, but yeah. And if you help and you have like skilled people with real estate in your family, like maybe your daughter or whatever is a real estate agent and they have, or a contractor and they're used to like doing homes. Yeah. You hold it for 10 years and then you die. They inherit that and you never pay tax on it at the stepped up basis.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I'm not a big real estate guy myself. People are complicated. I don't enjoy it. I have owned rental real estate before, and I was so happy to get rid of it. It was like a mosquito in my ear all the time. But I do have some very successful clients kill it in real estate, and they love it. I'm not in love with the dealing with what they say, toilets and tenants and trash. But I do know some people that took really – that came out, I want to say, like 4 years ago or something. And opportunity zones are usually lower income. Like they, whenever there's tax policy, they're trying to motivate behavior that's good, like for the greater good of society. And it was to revitalize usually very low income or very low income slash industrial areas. And I know some people that did very, very well with the opportunity zone stuff, especially with real estate appreciating over the last 4 years.
I mean, you might not even need to know real estate. Like if your kid just like happens to live in that area already, that is an opportunity zone, you just buy him a house with your gains, right? And you basically gave them a house and avoided tax, all tax free.
Yeah. Again, I'm not huge on the real estate thing, but for those that are, I think it's a good opportunity. It's never as simple as it sounds, like with real estate. And it's always something like when you own rental property, like it's always something. The sink broke. Oh, the hail on the roof, blah, 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 this stuff. Oh, I'm in the military. I have to move out early. Dude, it's Christmas. It's Thanksgiving. I'm not going to be able to get a tenant in here for a month and a half. Tough shit. There's nothing you can do about it. I'm breaking the lease. So
Hutch, I'm saying that your kid lives in the house. It's not a real estate thing where you're trying to get renters.
Oh,
you're
just, I see.
Buying your kid a house.
If they want to live in an opportunity zone. Okay. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, or if they're already in an opportunity zone. Paying like rent on an apartment or something.
Got it. I don't know if anybody has questions about any of those before I shifted to the retirement plan stuff. I realize this could be a space on its own, but anybody with questions about the gifting to kids? Oh, I was thinking not even kids, like, you know, Sumo Lama talking about his Tanya giving her a bunch of shib or whatever, you know, Nicholas Flamel, you know, wanting six girlfriends. Like, what a great way to kind of get some of that stuff off your balance sheet, right? Especially if they're not working, and shift it over to their balance sheet. That's the other thing. Like, this is probably that I brought this up in my year-end crypto stuff. For those of you that are full-time crypto, like Phil Doe Baggins, if you can keep your total income from all these transactions, right? And not income, but short-term capital gains is considered income. So whether it's bots or LPs or swaps or whatever, and the total of it is under, I think it's 40,000 and change for single filers, 0% capital gains rate. It does have to be long-term for that. So if you had like a certain amount that you would HODL, like you would just kind of purposely kind of HODL and stake, knowing that, hey, you know, if I could live on this 40K, 40K tax-free feels like whatever, 60K or in California, maybe even a little bit more, which is pretty cool. But if you have like these girlfriends and they're not working, right? And like you were kind of floating their boat anyway. Remember when you gift them stuff, your basis transfers when you gift. So you could gift them long-term capital gain property. And they could cash out up to 40,000 tax free. Bam! Nicholas Flamel getting five or six girlfriends now. There's now a benefit to getting five or six girlfriends if you want to live large. So 0% long-term capital gains rate for single filers and married filing jointly. It's more. I want to say 70 something. It could be 80. It's probably double 40. I don't remember what it is right now off the top of my head, but obviously, if you have income, it's going to be like the transaction's going to take over and above that. So if you have income and you're making, you know, 50K and you're married filing jointly and on paper, you guys make 50K and maybe one of you was working and the other one is trading crypto, you just figure out how much you need to get under that 0%. And you do that and have it be tax-free, which is pretty sweet. It looks like somebody's got a question. I see crypto something they requested. When you guys, Trevor, Dan B, want to let them up?
I don't have a prompt, actually.
Yeah, I don't see either.
Wow, it says requested on mine. Okay. Crypto Kramer. I don't know. Okay.
Yeah, we just added him. He's loading in right now.
Okay.
Hello. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Thanks for doing this, by the way, and thank you for bringing me on stage. So two questions for you guys. One is, I am an expat, so I'm an American citizen, but living in Europe. Wondering how and under what circumstances I file for crypto taxes, under which country. Is it based on the banks I'm using? Is it based on the platforms I'm trading with? And then the second question is, what are your thoughts on using your crypto as collateral lending? Is that a way to kind of get around being taxed?
No, so let's talk about the second one first, then we'll circle back to the first one. So this, what do you mean exactly by collateral lending?
Yeah, so like using platforms like BlockFi and Celsius to put up, like, let's say Ethereum, and then you get what, like 25% as a loan?
Yeah. I get it. So yeah, in that case, when you're the lender, you're depositing assets and you're collecting basic interest, even if it's of the asset in kind, that's just straight up ordinary income. Like you're going to get, that's like earning interest. That's like putting a CD in a bank and getting interest.
To clarify though, I think he's talking about lending against his assets, which would not be a taxable transaction.
Are you saying borrowing against your asset? Like, I'm saying,
so let's say you have $50,000 worth of Ethereum, you put it up as collateral to like these lending platforms like Celsius or BlockFi, and you get like 25% as a loan off of that collateral.
Oh, got it. Yeah, like Anger Borrow, and then you use that to buy crypto?
Well, you can use it to, I mean, you can cash out in fiat, I guess, and just.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah, sorry, I wasn't clear about that.
Yeah, no problem. And you were right, Pappy. Sorry about that. Yeah, so that is one of the beauties of borrowing against assets is, you know, like Mark Zuckerberg could have paid for his couch, like sold stock and paid cash for his house, but instead he posted stock as collateral and borrowed against it. And so that is not a taxable event because you're borrowing money. If you use that to invest, you're actually establishing basis. If you're just using that to spend, again, if you get a stable coin, technically when you cash out a stable coin for USD, that's a transaction, but it's going to be roughly the same thing. You might even get a small capital loss, but essentially it's a tax neutral transaction. Because gotcha. You're borrowing.
And once you start paying back the loan, is that a taxable event?
No, because you're paying back the loan. But I'm glad you asked this because I forgot. I did mean to ask Pappy this because I had heard something from him. If you have investment interest, you can actually, like, meaning you're paying interest for that loan, you can actually deduct that investment interest only up to gains you have. So if you wanted to actually cash out some lower basis assets too, you could figure out how much interest you paid and match that up with some gains and sell that amount of crypto and not recognize gains because the investment interest will offset. It actually offsets interest, like if you were earning like farm coins or whatever, but you actually have the opportunity to convert long-term capital gains, even though it's at a lower tax rate, to essentially ordinary to offset that. Like you were actually allowed to do that. Gotcha. So Pappy, do you know, I remember when I talked to you before that in the first phase, Anchor Borrow interest wasn't going to be reported. Is that on the radar? Hopefully pretty please.
Okay. So let's be clear here. Like, it's not on the radar right now. I mean, we got our hands full of what we have to chew right now. But let me be really clear here, because it's not like you can't do that. So the way What Tractera is it's a transaction parser that provides data that is digestible into wherever you want to put this data to calculate your taxes. And the format is very generic, so it can, you know, easily be formatted into any of these different softwares. When it comes to calculating the borrow interest rate your borrow interest for Anchor, what you can do in Tractera is you could create a report, you could, you know, add a couple filters to Excel to filter down your Anchor deposits and Anchor withdrawals, or like deposit collateral. Let me be clear here. So yes, you can filter a report to show your loan repayments and your borrows, and then you can calculate what your interest rate is based on what you currently have in Anchor protocol. I'm happy to spend some time with you, Hutch, and I can either write up like a Medium article or some sort of documentation around this, and we can do it either like a video or something.
That actually makes sense. What you just said, like, because you know what you took out, and so that'll be like that's what you took out. So if you took out say $100,000 or just happened to add up to a magical $100,000, let's just say, but then your total value or loan is $120,000. Well, then it's pretty safe to say that you were charged $20,000 of interest in that year. That's what you're saying, right?
Right. It's like a three parameter, you know, equation, you know, what you put into Anchor, what you took out of Anchor, and what you still owe Anchor.
Basically. I think that's awesome. Yeah, that's great.
I did want to say one thing on Crypto Kramer's question, though. Like, a lot of times when you're borrowing, it's because you want to buy something else, right? Like, you want to do something with that money. So, like, if you had some crypto assets and you also had, like, $2,000 just sitting around in your bank account and you were trying to pay your mortgage, like, it doesn't make sense to borrow in that situation because you already have money that's been taxed just sitting in your bank account that you can pay with it. Now, if you didn't have any money at all in your bank account, you only had crypto and you borrowed it, yeah, that $2,000 coming in would not be taxable to pay your mortgage. But if you do want to pay off that loan at some point, you're going to need to have some sort of money coming in to pay it off. And likely that money will be taxed, whether it's through ordinary income at work, or if you use part of your borrow to buy crypto and speculate on price movement, and then you sell it, like say your crypto doubles and you sell half of it to pay off your loan, then that would be taxed. So don't think like it's totally, absolutely tax-free in the bigger picture. There is some sort of tax collection happening.
I mean, I'd be really clear there. Like the actual amount that you're borrowing is not taxed. Unless you go earn gains on that somewhere else, that's where, you know, you generate more taxable transactions. Where I think this strategy makes more sense is where you have like a large amount of unrealized gains. Like let's say you bought ETH at 500 or Luna at 5. Then you're sitting on a lot of unrealized gains and you don't really want to sell those because you're going to be paying out of your ass in taxes.
It's a great strategy. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, and I want to hit the second part of his question. He's an expat in Europe and, you know, he killed it in crypto, or at least early enough to go ahead and move over there and scrape off earnings. And in all likelihood, it'll continue to appreciate, in which case, you know, he hopefully will be able to perpetually borrow against it at favorable rates and not pay tax versus if he had to sell it. What I am saying, and hopefully the trick that I am giving you is that realize that if you can calculate the interest that you're paying on that loan, even though it's just accruing against you, if you can calculate that, quantify what that is every year, and then go ahead at least some of your shitcoin or stuff that you do want to reallocate out of, go ahead and sell that for no gain, because you get to deduct the investment interest you pay, but only up to gains or investment income that you have. Marty, I see you have your hand up, but I did want to answer the second part of his question. So he asked a good question for expats, and I hate doing the American-centric thing, but unfortunately it's all I know on the tax thing. But I do have my really good friend who got me and tried to get me into crypto so much earlier. He's an expat as well. But the thing about being an American citizen is it is your responsibility to pay your taxes on anything you earn anywhere in any form all the time. And it's like Hotel California. You can check out, but you can never leave. Now, people do renounce their citizenship. Obviously, that would be a different story. But you would ask me, hey, where do I pay tax? Does it matter where the bank is? What there is you actually get, you do have to pay taxes, most likely in the domicile that you're in, and you don't need to share exactly where you're in. And I wouldn't even know what their rules are, but I would start with their laws first, since that's where you live and you don't want to piss them off or run afoul of those. File your taxes in the way that is compliant in that place. And then any taxes you paid there will offset taxes that you owe when you file as an American. And unfortunately, it's like double the reporting, but to the letter of the law, that is what you're supposed to do.
Gotcha. Okay. I just want to make sure that I'm not paying, double taxes.
They don't make you pay double taxes, but you have to do double work. That's the bummer about that.
That's fine with me, as long as, I'm only paying taxes in one domicile, as you say. But yes, makes sense and very, very clear. I appreciate all your answers.
Yeah, you got it, man. Marty, you had another question?
Marty?
I'm back. Sorry. This takes me a while. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, just want to make sure. So let's go to the next layer of this estate thing. You were kind of like halfway here. So Marty wants to take his highly appreciated Luna, highly appreciated Adam, whatever, stick it at anchor and live off the borrow for the rest of his life, right? So here comes the next step. Still highly appreciated assets in there, maybe Marty's only borrowed 25% of it, whatever else. And I die. Okay. Now, it should be really easy for the person who's managing my estate to find somebody to loan the amount of money to pay off anchor. Okay. AKA new money. Okay. And then take those highly appreciated assets out. Okay, and give them to my kids, okay, who aren't going to sell them. We're just going to put them in their own anchor account, and that is a tax-free transaction at the moment.
Well, hold on. So I want to do a separate space. I want to address this now, but okay. I think I want to go into a lot of detail with an estate planning, because I don't know how... With current estate planning exemption, I don't know how many people applies to, but I think even in the way that you mentioned it is way too complicated. There's a step up and basis rule as it stands now for assets that are in your estate. And so you don't need to go through all of that complication. Now, you would go through that if you wanted your kids to inherit every single Luna that you had. But theoretically, if you were under the lifetime exemption, which is really big, I want to say it's like 12 million per spouse right now. If you were under that, then your kids would automatically get a step up in basis and they could just sell it for basically tax neutral and pay off the loan if they wanted to. If you wanted simplicity, you wouldn't need to go through all the hubbubaloo that you talked about. But it does bring up a bigger issue. First of all, there's been talk about getting rid of the step up in basis. Second of all, there's been talk about bringing the estate tax exemption back down to, some people say 5 million per spouse, some people say 3.5 million, which is still a lot of money. But I mean, we all believe Luna could get there. And so that's what I do want to share is, for those of you that believe you're going to have an estate tax issue, there is an opportunity now, and this is the realm that I deal in more so than income tax, just being in life insurance business. There is an opportunity now to use today's very, very high estate tax exemptions that will probably never be this high again because we owe $30 trillion and they're going to go after people with the money, to shift them out of your estate now into, and I was talking to Dan B about this, people know about revocable and irrevocable, and they usually get them mixed up. You need to shift it out to an irrevocable trust, and you have a lifetime exemption amount. I'll look it up, and it doesn't. You can use it for gifting, or you can use it for estate tax. So you get the, everybody gets the same amount. So let's just say a lifetime exemption amount. But the problem that a lot of my clients have with it is you lose control. Okay, so it's $12,060,000 per spouse. So you could shift $24 million, or put another way, if you die with less than $24 million in your estate, to all your assets and liabilities tallied up, if you're worth less than $24 million, you don't have an estate tax problem. But if you end up with more than that, you have a massive estate tax problem. It's like, forget all the income tax and capital gains you paid along the way. There's a whole other tax system called the transfer tax system, dealing with estate tax, gift tax, and what's called generation skipping tax. And currently it's 40% top estate rate over and above 24 million. Now, even the biggest Luna ballers, well, probably the biggest Luna ballers there, but emerging Luna ballers aren't there now, but if Luna 10Xs, that's a big problem. And so what I tell my clients is, if you only have little windows and doors and one big garage door, and the big garage door is that 12 million per spouse, do you want to fit a baby elephant through there? Or do you want to wait until it's like this big daddy, whatever, brontosaurus looking elephant? It's going to be hard to fit them through there. And so it's unlikely, if you think that Luna's going to 10X from here, that you're going to die and leave the undertaker with the bill. So maybe before they change a lot of the rules and make the windows and doors and garage doors a lot smaller, plus there's a lot of very cool strategies dealing with family discounting and whatnot, certain types of trusts and LLCs and limited partnerships to kind of squash control and marketability so your heirs can't go ahead and squander it. And this kind of gets back into like, you can't have it both ways, IRS. There's some really cool strategies that they've talked about getting rid of that are still available now, that maybe it does make sense to start to set up that. And it's a dirty word, that irrevocable word. People hate it because it means you give up control. Maybe it does make sense to start to shift things out to irrevocable trust now. And there are ways, and I'm, again, this is a whole other call, so I'm going to probably, I see Lunanomics has his hand up, so I probably will take his question because he's a guy that could have this kind of issue. But I think this could be its own separate call, because there are ways to make that word irrevocable a little bit better, where you can retain, and I'm going to say the word sufficient strings of income and control. I don't want to say control because technically you don't have it, but kind of you have some semblance of control. There are ways that are legal to maintain sufficient strings of income control and actually have some escape hatches if your whole world comes crumbling down and you gifted everything away into these trusts, to be able to get back in. And that I do know about, and I'm not a lawyer, I can't do this stuff, don't want to do this stuff for y'all, but I do know about and can at least off the meter discuss, so you can find qualified counsel to help you do these things. So I want it to be a separate space. I'll take Lunanomics questions on this, but I think this could, like estate tax and transfer tax, could be its own entire space. What's up, Lunanomics?
Hey, Hutch. Thanks for doing this space. I just got two questions. The first question is, so if I, you're familiar with the strategy that I do. So I'm buying Luna, converting it to B Luna, and then borrowing off of it. But I buy liquid Luna and kind of go in and out of liquid Luna. What's the, is it like first in, last out, or is it like last out, first?
Yeah.
I don't know what's
the, it's FIFO, LIFO, HIFO. I can't give you that answer because it's going to depend on your situation. we did kind of cover this in detail, but I'll just give you the kind of the quick highlights, and then you should definitely, when Terra Spaces posts this, check out, because we went in depth. But FIFOs, okay, yeah, no problem. I'll just give you the quick hurry up, because maybe some other people miss it too. You don't know what your situation is. So the best way is none of those. It does require extra work. The best way is to identify specific lots, and then you can really get surgical and customize what you're doing. And you're kind of covering a lot of things. So there's also, on this space, there's two different interpretations of how LPs are taxed. And one would be more favorable than the other, and I don't know which. It kind of depends on your own facts and circumstances, but you be consistent. So my suggestion to you, to everybody else, is that the single best tax planning tool in the interim for early 2022 is a word called extension. And if you, as long as you pay what you think your tax is going to be by April 15th, then you won't have, and you file an extension, you won't pay any penalties. And then that'll give you a little extra lead time to sift through the data. And Pappy was talking about how Tractera just launched today, but it's kind of the first beta version. And there's other, like, it links with Coinly, but there's also a couple others that are linking with it, and they haven't even talked to them. So I think this stuff is going to get better. So on paper, highest in, first out seems like it'd be better. But I think the best thing to do is, like, just put it in simple form. You would probably use Excel, but just think of a piece of paper, fold it in half, have all your buys in cascading order on one side from high to low, have all your sells in cascading order from high to low, and that includes the swaps, and it may or may not include depositing and withdrawing from an LP, depending on how you choose to do it on your own, because the IRS hasn't given guidance. And then you just go, it's kind of like drawing lines where you're a kid, like diagonally up, down, sideways. You just kind of match them up as close as you can to create the most tax neutral situation possible, because I'm pretty sure that's what you're trying to do.
Got it. Yeah. Highest in, first out. Great. Okay. So my last two questions is, will you be my tax consultant? And then when are we moving to Puerto Rico?
So the answer is no, but I will help you. You have helped me a ton. And so I will help you, but I will, let's just say, work with you and help you with the knowledge that I have, just like you've helped me with your knowledge, so that you can bring it to qualified counsel and they can check all the boxes and do everything right. But here's the thing about accountants, guys. They're usually not the most proactive folks in the world, and they're kind of like afraid of their shadow a little bit. So like the stuff that we do is just like crazy town to them. And you have to kind of take the driver's seat with the strategy, the tax strategy and the tack you want to take, and then find a good accountant that is going to go ahead and be the bean counter and put it in all the boxes. And if you find one that's actually a really good strategist too, that's a bonus. They're just hard to come by. And usually when you do come by them, I found them to be a lot more expensive. So
yeah. Thanks, Hutch. Appreciate it.
You got it, buddy. Okay. Any questions before I move on to the Puerto Rico thing? So Puerto Rico, I can't move there. But second of all, I did learn that if you have a bunch of embedded gains here in the States, you're kind of screwed. Like, you don't get to go over there and realize them tax-free. Like, it's kind of like that old basis goes with you. But on all future trades, short-term and long-term capital gains is a 0% rate, is my understanding. It is complicated. Apparently, it's not as good as like when my buddy moved there. The reason I keep going there is there may be some opportunities for me to partner with other crypto business and just network, because I would love to shift over to this space as, I don't really want a full-time job. I just want to be involved in different projects, and I'm just really hot for crypto. And so I'm just trying to build up my network and see some things I can get involved with. And there is an opportunity. There is a crypto hedge fund out there that seems to like the way I think. So I may be going back out there in spring, but I have no plans to move there long-term. I probably am stuck here, trapped in paradise, kind of like you, buddy. You're trapped in paradise too, baby. over there in Hawaii. But let's just say this, and this is its own call. There's some other really cool advance charitable stuff that, and I know we've talked about some more kind of advanced stuff that kind of got shot down by the service, but I plan to come out with some cool strategies for that all of us can use in the charitable stuff that may help offset some of the tax pain. So a couple hands up. I'm going to have to plug in this Apple iPhone. So I'm going to try and do that while you guys ask questions.
So if I could just interject for one quick second. You talked about file early.
Just file an extension. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Forgive me. I said it the opposite way. File extension. So the other thing, again, no advice here, whatever else, in my estimation, is I'm just going to throw money at them every quarter. So, you know, January 15th, April 15th, you know, every 3 months, whatever else for my quarterly, you know, estimates, whatever else. I'm just going to throw in money, you know, for the crypto gains that, from my perspective, are estimates, right? And I'm going to keep using more different, better software tools to refine that. And that gives me some fig leaf if they don't like my number. Anyway, I will let you guys go. Thank you so much for this call.
Yeah.
And the great stuff.
You got it. I'm on speaker now, so let me know if I sound weird. Looks like I can't hear, but somebody's got a question down there.
Yeah, Hutch, when you connected me on here a couple of minutes ago, you were speaking to the whole Puerto Rico thing. I was going to comment on that, but I didn't know exactly how far you went into it.
No, I don't even know that much about it. Like, I realize it's not an option for me. You wanted to share a little bit of alpha.
So you started to say what I heard you say about Puerto Rico and the if you're already sitting on gains in crypto, that's 100% correct. There's no way of getting around it. You can't just move to Puerto Rico if you're sitting on 10 million already or a million or whatever it is, or more. And I believe you have to spend also about 3 years minimum as a resident in a real way before they even allow you to start seeing you in a different manner from a tax perspective.
You might be right. I had a buddy that moved over there earlier in 2018, and he goes, I was just asking him some questions, and he goes, I don't know, your tax act is going to be different than my tax act. And he goes, I've heard some things, but I don't know. And unless you're really serious, I don't want to waste any energy figuring it out for you. And I said, it's a non-starter for me.
Right. But I am pretty certain on that. So anybody who has those, I mean, we're all looking for the best possible situation. That's what this whole talk is about, which deeply appreciated for you and you taking the time, you and Dan B and everyone and Trevor to taking the time to do this and Poppy. Puerto Rico, unless you were already there, you know, 3, 4, 5 years ago, it's probably a non-starter.
Okay. Looks like Winter's got a question. I want to shift to at some point the IRAs and 401ks, but let's do some more questions.
Yeah, he should be loading in right now.
Winter, I think you're in.
Yeah, I mean, the Puerto Rico thing I've looked into a little bit. You have to pay some fees to get in. I think it's something like $5,000. You traditionally had to make some sort of contribution to some charitable organization in Puerto Rico to the tune of about $10,000 a year. I think that may still remain in effect. At this point, I think you're required to own a property in Puerto Rico with the new tax laws. So you have to, in the past, you could just like rent and you have to spend, 182 days per calendar year on the soil to qualify for anything.
I think all that's true. And I think you have to hire employees too. It used to be my friend said he was allowed to just hire one, but I think you have to hire more than one. I want to say I heard three maybe.
Yeah, it's getting worse and worse, it sounds like. Just a couple of other things I'd mention is that if you have an account on Voyager, they have some sort of affiliation with CryptoTaxTrader.com. and they'll do your taxes for free, they say, your crypto taxes. So that particular software service may be available for you for free if you have an account on Voyager. I don't know how good it is. As you know, there are like a million of these things. There's Zen Ledger. There's Accointing, in addition to Coinly and some of the other ones you've mentioned. I have no idea, you know, which one I'm going to choose. I'm trying to look into it. And as far as like saving money by going with an accountant who doesn't know anything about, you mentioned like the accountants who know stuff about crypto are expensive. Well, believe me, the ones who don't know about crypto are expensive too, because I've been paying crypto taxes for 3 years. My accountant doesn't know the first thing about crypto. Did, you know, basically the first couple of years was doing it all by hand when there weren't good rules or I didn't know much about the software. And he charged me an arm and a leg and a half. So there you go.
I wasn't saying that didn't know about crypto, but what I do know from dealing with my clients is the ones that have accountants that are really proactive just in terms of strategy, that I've this is a quote from one of my clients. I get a bill every time he dreams about me. Right. But listen, if you can find a good accountant, that's great. It's proactive and great at crypto. By all means, please share with all of us. I think we might all hire them. What I've found, since I often do some creative strategies, is I just found an accountant that, she'll bill me hourly when I'm like, hey, this is what I'm trying to do. This is how I think I can report it this way, right? Does that sound good? And she'll go, okay, yeah, I'll do that. No, yes, I will do this. I won't do this. And it works for me. Pappy, since a lot of people jumped on late, did you want to share who's already integrating with Traktera again?
Sure. Yeah. So right now we've had talks with Crypto Tax Calculator. Recently I discovered that CoinPanda was using our beta Traktera, which is actually still online. We're going to get rid of that soon. But we're going to reach out to CoinPanda and hook them up with our API and see if they're interested in integrating the new version. That this will be like the final version of Traktera. I mean, that was the whole purpose of the iterations were to get to a point where we could expand transaction support in a way that's scalable and, you know, not a huge amount of work. So right now, Crypto Tax Calculator is the only one that's confirmed integrating with the new version of Traktera, but we got a few other things in the works, and I'm sure we can get them on board.
Hey, since there's a seems to be kind of like a greater mashup more and more with the Invest Voyager folks, and I'm part of Invest Voyager too. Like I have stuff on there. Do you think we can maybe reach out, or maybe some of the Voyager, maybe Big T or Obi or one of those guys who's in deep, maybe can connect the coin tracker with Pappy so we can get Traktera on there? I guess they don't have the mic, so they can't say yes. But hopefully, and I'll actually reach out to Big T because he's usually really good about that and kind of loves the synergy with the Luna and the Invest Voyager folks. Any other questions before we kind of jump to some cool retirement stuff? I know I did a whole space on this, but I've actually learned more, and some of the information I got wasn't totally great. So I have an update, and I've actually chosen a path, and I think I've found a couple different paths that I can share with you guys. But if there's any more questions, I'm happy to. Oh, yeah, it looks like full. I don't know if that's full tilt, but somebody down there is requesting. Can one of you guys let him on? I'm a terrible guy.
Yeah, he's loading in right now.
Thanks for checking out another episode of The Ether. That was part one of a two-part space crypto tax talk with Hutch and Poppy, recorded on Saturday, February 5th, 2022. This episode of The Ether is brought to you by Talus. Talus Protocol is the NFT platform for independent artists on Terra. Talus helps to provide artists with the tools and resources needed to transition from traditional art into the NFT world. With their V1 launch coming soon, Talus will be the place to see real-world art reflected on Terra. Be sure to join their Telegram and follow Talus on Twitter for updates on their roadmap, validator, and other Talus news. Find your next favorite artist on talus.art. This episode of The Ether is also brought to you by LuArt. LuArt is the first gamified NFT platform built on the Terra network. LuArt provides a seamless minting and trading experience, all while earning you rewards just for being a user. Be sure to follow them on Twitter and join the community in the Discord server for the most up-to-date news and announcements regarding all the hot new NFT launches, platform upgrades, and new projects hitting the secondary marketplace. Are you ready to put your helmet on and join the movement? Find out more at luart.io. TerraSpaces appreciates the support from all our sponsors. For TerraSpaces.org, I'm Finn. Thanks for listening. When I'm ripping and rapping, I ain't picking the bastards who be tricking the masses into getting their asses kicked. Feels like I've been getting my masters. Fuck a pump and dump, I like the income that's passive. Raise up the bar before I fly right past it. I'll be writing rhymes till they put me in a casket. Old man shit, put the lotion on its skin. Then put that shit back in the damn basket. Like Buffalo Bill, the way I'm ruffling feathers. Snuffing out debt, cut the heads off collectors. Keep a couple heads in a jar as keepsakes. And take the rest and turn them into free bait. Upgrade the feeling, supply the free base. Looking all professional, tools in the briefcase. Running on empty from gassing up my teammates. First one down, let me know how that sleep tastes.
Now places the lotion in the
and impossible, defending the plausible from ending demonstrable. The mission isn't even worried about the clearance. Running interference till our enemies fear us. We're only one disappearance away from a bad day. Everybody trying to save face on the last day. Feeling fancy, about to pull out the masse. Drop the eight ball in passing, that's so passe. I'm getting nasty, you cannot put it past me. A mix between blasphemy and tuck everlasting. Feeling like a masterpiece, looking like a tragedy. Trying to get through another day full of savagery. Getting headstrong from working in the mess hall, all hands on deck, waiting for our next haul. I need the rest, got big plans to eject, so feed the grass and keep off the Kleenex.
I am interested in magic because I am fascinated with psychology. I love to learn about how people make inferences go, how they draw conclusions, find patterns and information. And in particular, I'm interested in all that can go wrong. How an individual can be led astray with certain cognitive vulnerabilities or exploited.